marijuana legalization also ushers in the return of the American hemp industry. Get the latest news from the author of Hemp Bound and Too High to Fail, Doug Fine, in our Hemp Day Hump Day Update.
Welcome back, everybody. Time for our Hemp Day Hump Day Update. And joining us by telephone, our good friend Doug Fine is on the line. How you doing, Doug? Doug, are you hearing me okay? Oh, we're having that issue.
Yeah, sorry about that. Oh. I had you on mute.
Had me on mute. How are you doing? Happens all the time, man. I know how it goes. Good to hear from you, Doug. Are you in New Mexico today?
I am in New Mexico. I've been dancing around a bit here. There's been a lot happening with hemp all over the world since our last Hemp Day update. But I myself was in Oregon doing some land surveying and ground readying for a hemp project there in the Beaver State, one of dozens of states that are prepping for hemp season as we speak.
Oh, that's great. So what are the latest rules and regs? Are we going to see more hemp planted in the state of Oregon this next season?
Yeah, I would say so. There's no stopping it. Oregon is still one of those states that has a really good policy, and the applications are now open again for farmers for this season, for new farmers, which is very, very important. We had discussed that in our last segment. It's not that hard to get a permit, but then from there, you're kind of on your own. So where, once again, most farmers are playing that sort of game of trying to get seeds and make it happen, and they will, especially as more and more states come on, more and more farmers come online, and more seed is produced. There are institutions of higher education in Oregon that are coming on board for the first time this year, and that helps farmers, and all research helps further the industry as well. But I think it's going to be the private ventures that don't have acreage restrictions or application restrictions and are really going for it, certainly in a research capacity to be in sync with federal law, but bigger scale. Because when you're doing research into applications that are really important to me, like energy, you need to have the biomass, you need to have large acreage plants, and phytoremediation, that soil studies, those I think are helpful to have large acreage as well as seed development. So I'm really glad to see Oregon farmers going for it in a big way.
Now, many times we've discussed in the past the worry from the medical cannabis growers that there could be some problems with cross-pollination. Was that something that was addressed or anything the legislature was concerned with?
Well, no, actually, that issue, thankfully, appears to be, if not totally resolved, well on its way to be resolved. Let's put it this way. You're not, some of the folks that were sort of worked up about it last year have since said, okay, we see how it is now. And all along the line that people that care about all sides of the plant were giving, includes myself and everybody that I'm working with everywhere around the nation, is that we care about the entire plant, and it's about good communication amongst farmers and producers. That's true. And so it's for that reason, Russ, I'm glad that the debate happened, because the importance of the debate is really between cannabis providers that are sort of shorter cycle, outdoor psychoactive cannabis providers. Because with legalization, there are going to be amateurs, there are going to be people that aren't quite sure how pollination works. And that type of drift, even prior to full legalization, the cannabis that farmers have been following for the last half decade from California, Oregon, and elsewhere, they talk about how you have to be vigilant. Farming is a real full-time job. It's not an absentee job where you walk away. And if you see that some of your flowers have issues, you have to address that right away. And that's always been an issue, and it's only going to be more so with legalization and people other than professional cultivators coming into the market. So it's good that the discussion happened, and the message here is it's all one plant, and the applications are moving towards that. That's as I'm preparing now, there's a big, besides planting season and all the projects I'm helping in various states personally and covering and filming and for media projects, I also have a whole bunch of speaking events coming up, and I'm honing the message for this year. And one of them is, you know, the single plant concept, that soil health is really important as well. But the fact that we have, let's say, Gary Johnson involved in a project that produces mints type things, you know, candies or whatever, that are explicitly low THC, not absent THC, but low, there are going to be people that prefer so-called psychoactive with lower THC and on the, what, you know, used to be segmented for political reasons into the hemp side. Some of those crops are going to require different cannabinoid profiles that may include high THC purely because it's required for things like fiber integrity, seed oil content, seed oil health. And so we're not going to be able to delineate, we're not going to be able to guess the application of a plant based on its THC level. We're just going to all have to, everybody involved in the industry is going to plant what works for them and have to be a good farmer and a good neighbor about it.
You know, you just mentioned something that I think a lot of people don't consider in this industrial hemp argument or this issue, and that is this artificial distinction that industrial hemp has to be below 0.3% THC. And you kind of just briefly mentioned why that's bad kind of in passing, but could you get into more detail about how that artificial restriction affects the quality of the hemp products?
Yeah, I mean, it's an arbitrary, recent and unnecessary and detrimental categorization, a definition of hemp. The story has to do with infighting within European cultivars in the 90s. Already the province of Tasmania down under has unilaterally lifted their definition of hemp up to 1% THC. And you know, it's just one of these last insane drug war things that's dying out. Like, for instance, on psychoactive cannabis, this idea of putting a natural herb into a red light district and considering it a sin if you're going to allow, you know, dangerous pharmaceuticals that have side effects at your corner grocery store, that's at your corner pharmacy, that's what I want, 1,000 feet from schools.
Yeah.
And so along with that, we have this arbitrary THC hysteria that simply has to go for the good of the entire industry. And we'll get there. I mean, I know personally, as somebody that's a full-time, coverer and researcher of cannabis, that I can go now into the halls of Congress and talk about, I did, in fact, have this conversation with a Republican congressman from Kentucky, Thomas Massey. He brought it up. He said, do we need to do something about this THC limit? I mean, they get it. They get it. They're trying to help the industry.
So you're saying, though, you mentioned something about the fiber strength wouldn't be as good. The seed oil content would be degraded. Can you get into that detail?
Sure. I can give sort of a metaphorical analogy that has to do with human physiology and then try to give a practical explanation from the industrial side, from an entrepreneur side or a producer side. So the analogy of restricting the cultivation of cannabis for any application, from old school, from rope to nano, like batteries, as we discussed on previous segments during Hump Day, Hump Day, Russ, to psychoactive, to nutraceutical, to on the explicitly medicinal side, and social, that, you know, it's taking out a part of the plant that's essential would be like taking out a component of our blood. It would be like saying this part of your hemoglobin could potentially be synthesized into something that might be psychoactive. So therefore, it can't get higher than this in your body, and your body might want and need it for a wide variety of applications other than psychoactive concentration. And so so how that plays into industry is, we may have an application, we will have an application for a certain type of plastic, a moldable, flexible kind of plastic to be used for a cell phone case that we want to derive from hemp and other biomaterials. And we find out that actually the flexibility on post-harvest fiber is way higher than if the actual bast fiber comes from a cannabis plant that has 4% THC and a million other variables to it. To have an arbitrary restriction on that one component hurts the business.
So this, we've also lately talked about the viability of the, I believe it was the hemp bast fibers in that, the battery technology, the nanotechnology we're talking about. So is this 0.3% restriction going to forestall that development of that technology?
No, I wouldn't say necessarily. We're doing a pretty good job. Hemp World is doing an amazing job, astounding job at making it work based on the current rules. I just think it's good. The natural migration, as research intensifies on all levels of the plant, is that some people with explicit social cannabis marketing intentions with medicinal are going to want lower THC, and some people are what today we think of as industrial applications are going to want higher for production. Edible seed oil, let's say, might find that you're getting higher production, higher quality, more nutritious seed that has nothing to do with the end product. Kids can still eat the hemp seed pressed oil in their shake, but that the plant itself wanted a higher THC level as it was producing those seeds. So, you know, it's just a restriction that has to go away. But no, that progress is going really well. In fact, that's one of the things I'm really excited about, and I'm going to be talking about at the upcoming NoCo Hemp Expo and at the United Nations General Assembly Special Session on Narcotic Drugs in New York in April and in Europe in June, is this beauty, this poetry of healing the soil, the most basic things that human life on Earth needs, and then from them deriving these nanotechnology applications like the supercapacitors you mentioned.
Yeah, we are looking forward to that, and we're going to talk a little bit more about this NoCo North Colorado Hemp. We've got another guest calling in soon. I'm sorry, remind me of his name again.
Sure, Morris Beagle.
Morris Beagle, that's it. Morris Beagle will be joining us here in just a little bit, so stay tuned. We're going to do an extended Hemp Day Hump Day segment with Doug Fine and Morris Beagle joining us in just a moment. And we've also got our phone lines open at 971-533-7111. If you got a question for Morris or Doug Fine on industrial hemp, this would be the time to get it in. Or join us in our chat room at cannabisradio.com, and we'll take your questions there. Stay tuned. We're back with more on hemp when we return.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.